healing practice. But we know this from our own experience too. It's hard for me to be grouchy when I'm feeling grateful. It's hard for me to be angry or hateful or impatient when I'm feeling gratitude. I can do it, but it's hard. So Medicine King also used faith to teach the ultimate truth of inner being. So we Westerners get a little fidgety when we start talking about faith. Maybe we think that faith means we have to do it because I tell you to do it, or it means don't ask questions. But Medicine King taught us that faith in the Buddhist context is really a beneficial tool. We need faith in the teachings at least a little bit in order to make the effort to try to practice the teachings. And when we try the practice, when we use our reasoned judgment and direct experience, it develops our faith. Our faith in ourselves, and faith in the teachings, and faith in our capacity to follow the teachings. So Bodhisattva Medicine King also used devotion to teach the ultimate truth of no birth, no death. Devotion to our teachers, devotion to their teachings, devotion to our community of friends who practice together. We learned that devotion to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha is a training actually in love for all beings. It's a very strong way to train ourselves to love ourselves and to love our loved ones and all people and also all animals, plants, and minerals. So today we meet another wonderful bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara. I really, really like the way Thay introduces us to this bodhisattva. Here it is. Chanting the Lotus Sutra by night, the sound shook the galaxies. The next morning when planet Earth woke up, her lap was full of flowers. Buddha of 10,000 beautiful aspects, may I ask you this question? Why did they give that bodhisattva the name Avalokita? And the Buddha, bless his heart, spends the rest of this chapter explaining how how Avalokita's name came from her skills and abilities. You can read the full version in Thay's Chanting from the Heart book in that section called Discourse on the Lotus of the Wonderful Dharma, the Universal Door chapter. So Avalokita, like the Bodhisattva Medicine King, can take on any form in order to help relieve our suffering. Sometimes Avalokita is a man, sometimes a woman, sometimes a flower, sometimes a horse. In my case, one time Avalokita first took one form and then changed into another form and took another form. This happened many years ago in the 1980s. So first he took the form of the moon. I was really unhappy, so I had walked outside under a full moon, and I sighed and I said, now what do I do? It wasn't a rhetorical question, but But the moon didn't answer. The moon said nothing. In fact, I didn't get my answer to that question until 1998. It was another moony night. I was at one of Ty's retreats in Deer Park. I looked up in that dark sky, you know, that's there at Deer Park, and I smiled at the moon before I went to bed. And then as I was going to sleep, I started saying, Avalokiteshvara, Avalokiteshvara. I said it over and over. I was a very young practitioner. Well, I wasn't young, but I had been a practitioner for only a few months. So I wasn't really calling out the name as a form of devotion or faith or gratitude like the medicine king Bodhisattva would have done. I just wanted to be able to pronounce her name right. Anyway, after I thought I had it right, after a few more repetitions, I started drifting off to sleep, and I heard Avalokita whisper, "Terry." I smiled, a kind of spooked smile, but then I went to sleep. And the next morning, Avalokita changed form from the moon and took the form of monastics in Deer Park. He gave me the name Awakened Action of the Heart in a ceremony where I and 500 of my best friends received the transmission of the 5 mindfulness trainings. I knew it was the answer to my "now what do I do" question that I had asked decades before. So Avalokiteshvara takes on the form you need in order to put an end to your suffering, and then changes form too as needed. We're taught in the Lotus Sutra that if you call Avalokita's name, you can't just do it mechanically. You have to be really focused, really concentrated. But if you call her name and are really concentrated, then your mind becomes calm, peaceful, joyful. And when you're peaceful like that, you have a chance to free yourself from your suffering. You can call his name, or you can bring to mind an image of that beautiful, joyful Bodhisattva, totally free, like the moon. And that also helps your mind become concentrated, which helps you become peaceful and calm, which helps you overcome your unhappiness. So Avalokiteshvara is the Bodhisattva of compassion, deep listening, the Bodhisattva of true love, the Bodhisattva of love so boundless, the love is called the Four Immeasurables. So I've invited several folks here to help me with this teaching about the Four Immeasurables. You already know from the previous talks that I need all the help I can get. So our first guest teacher is Hafiz, the 14th century Persian mystic. So he's going to introduce the theme of our discussion. The subject tonight is love. And for tomorrow night as well. As a matter of fact, I know of no better topic for us to discuss until we all die. So I didn't think that we would discuss love until we all die, but it might be fun to discuss it for a few minutes. Antonio, could you invite one sound of the bell for us? So the Buddha taught that true love includes love of all beings, love of ourselves, love of our beloved ones, but love of all people, and love of Mother Earth, of all animals, plants, and minerals. The Buddha said that it's not enough to just have the intention to love all beings. We have to have the capacity. We have to train ourselves to do the work, to take the action, to demonstrate our love. We can't just pretend that all beings already know that we love them. So Gabriel Garcia Marquez, our next teacher, is a Colombian novelist and a Nobel Prize winner. He'll help explain this point. So in his poem, I think he's probably talking about his sweetheart, but I invite you to include all beings as you listen. When you hear you in the poem, please think of yourself, your beloved ones, all people, animals, plants, and minerals. Think of Mother Earth. If I knew that today would be the last time I'd see you, I would hug you tight and pray the Lord to be the keeper of your soul. If I knew that this would be the last time you passed through this door, I'd embrace you, kiss you, and call you back for one more. If I knew that this would be the last time I would hear your voice, I'd take hold of each word to be able to hear it over and over again. If I knew that this is the last time I'd see you, I'd tell you I love you and would not just assume foolishly you know it already. So the four elements of true love, according to the Buddha, are in Sanskrit, Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, and Upeksha. They're usually taught in that order, but I'd like us to look at Upeksha first. I think Upeksha must be a very difficult word to translate into English, because when I first heard Thay talk about it years ago, he translated it as equanimity. And lately, he's also been defining it as non-discrimination and inclusiveness. Another way to think about Upeksha is the understanding that there is no separation between you and others. My daddy used to say, if mama's not happy, nobody's happy. Maybe your daddy said that too. Well, daddy wasn't a Buddhist, but he was teaching Upeksha. Because when my mama is not happy, I really am not happy because I'm not separate from my mama. My mama is in me. Her genes are in me, but her unhappiness and happiness are also in me. I've learned that it works the other way too. When my child, my 40-year-old children, are unhappy, I, the mama, am also unhappy because my children are in me. We all know this is true because we've all had these kinds of experiences. In the grocery store, if the clerk is happy, you feel happy. If the clerk is grouchy, you feel a little bit grouchy yourself. That's because there's no separation between you and the grocery clerk. There's no individual happiness. There's no individual suffering. This teaching of non-separation is a very profound teaching from the Buddha, and by the way, also from quantum physicists, who now, 2,500 years after the Buddha, Masaminsk, gives the same teachings. So imagine how the world might be if we all really understood and practiced this teaching of interconnectedness, of non-separation, what Thay calls interbeing. Imagine if the Palestinians and Israelis understood that the happiness of one depended on the happiness of the other. If our politicians on the right and our politicians on the left understood that they're one. Here comes Hafiz again offering his understanding of upeksha, of non-discrimination, non-separation. He says, our union is like this. You feel cold, so I reach for a blanket to cover our shivering feet. A hunger comes into your body, so I run to the garden and start digging potatoes. You ask for a few words of comfort and guidance. I quickly kneel at your side, offering you this whole book as a gift. You ache with loneliness one night, so much you weep, and I say, here's a rope. Tie it around me. Hafiz will be your companion for life. So we might understand how we could train ourselves to love our beloved ones that way, but what about strangers? Do we need to love them? Must we love all beings in the animal, plant, and mineral worlds? Roaches? Weeds? Well, according to the Buddha and the quantum physicist, the answer is yes. And for the same reason, we need to learn to love our beloved ones that way. Because we're not separate from any person, animal, plant, or mineral. Thay says our body can help teach us this truth of non-separation. He asks us to consider our eyes and feet. So, my eyes never say to my feet, oh, I am so amazing. I'm up here on top of Terry's head. I can see the whole sky. My eyes don't have the superiority complex. And my feet never say to my eyes, I can't see the sky. Well, I can't see anything. And I'm way down here and wallowing around in the dirt all the time. My feet don't have the inferiority complex. Our eyes know that they need our feet to move from one place to another. And our feet know that they need our eyes in order to move around safely. Our eyes and our feet work in harmony for our happiness and our well-being. Because of this understanding that they're not separate, that they are just one organism, our eyes and our feet also don't have the equality complex. Because they realize that they are one, they can't compare each other. So our eyes love our feet and our feet love our eyes partly because they understand they need each other. They love each other partly for what they can do for each other. But this is not enough for true love. Our eyes love our feet also for the miracle that our feet are. A miracle of bones and tendons and vessels and skin and muscle that can walk and jump and tiptoe and dance and kick a ball. And our feet love our eyes, not just for what our eyes can do for our feet, but for the marvel that our eyes are. So just like my eyes and my feet, I must learn to love all beings, not just for what they can do for me, not only because of my relationship with them, but also for the miracle that they are. I do love Gustavo for what he does for me, for the many ways we're connected, but I also love him for the wonder that he is, for his Gustavo-ness. So how do we learn to see ourselves and others as miracles? First, we need to see ourselves as miracles. How do we do this? Well, we need to get to know ourselves. We sit on the cushion and listen to the stories that we tell ourselves. We listen to our thoughts. We get really familiar with the kinds of stories and the kinds of thoughts we have. And then we pay attention. We're mindful in our daily lives so we can hear what we say and what we don't say to others. We notice what we do and what we don't do. We notice what makes us truly happy and what makes us unhappy. We learn to see others as miracles in the same way. We get to know others by listening and observing, by being awake, mindful. Tai says that only when we understand others can we truly love them. Antonio, may we have another bell? So another element of true love is Maitri. Maitri means offering friendship, brotherhood, sisterhood, offering happiness, loving kindness, offering love to ourselves and to all beings. Here's Hafiz. It happens all the time in heaven, and someday it will begin to happen again on earth, that men and women who are married, and men and men who are lovers, and women who give each other light, often will get down on their knees, and while so tenderly holding their lover's hands, with tears in their eyes, will sincerely speak, saying, "My dear, how can I be more loving to you? How can I be more kind?" Well, before we can offer love to others, we must first offer love to ourselves. We must first be our own best friend. We might think this is selfish or self-centered, but if we don't have love within us, how are we going to give love away? By love, I don't mean a nice kitty kind of love. Loving kindness includes a deep commitment to love in sickness and in health. To love when it's not convenient. To love even when it's difficult. So there's some diligence in this kind of love. Dedication, loyalty. So after we've developed some kindness, some love in ourselves, we can offer loving kindness to others. To do that, we need to ask, like Hafiz did, how can I be more loving to you? How can I be more kind? We need to ask ourselves, what will make him, her, them, it happy? We can't just impose our own ideas of loving kindness on others. You might want to think, I want to make Terry happy. I'm going to grill her a big juicy steak. And that would make some folks happy, and your intention is lovely, but I don't like meat, so it would not be an act of love to offer me. So we have to find out what others perceive as kindness, as love. For example, Jesus offered love to some folks who were tired and distraught when he said, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest." Another element of true love is karuna. Karuna means compassion. Tai doesn't like this translation of karuna very much because compassion means co-suffering. You share in the suffering, the hardship with another. And that's not what karuna means. Karuna means to remove or transform the suffering in ourselves and in others. When our brother Antonio and I were talking about karuna, he reminded me that we have to be careful that we don't confuse compassion with being just nice, especially being nice because we want to be liked, or because we feel lonely, or because we want to fit in. Also, sometimes compassion means telling someone something that they may not want to hear. So this requires us to fully understand the other person before we say anything, and then to be really solid and speak Mark and Colleen in Omaha, and Lynn in Fort Worth, and Numai in Austin, and Matei in Boise, and Becky and Michelle in San Antonio, and Jackie in Miami, and other yoga teachers and healers, don't take on the aches and pains of their students, their patients, but rather they help them to remove the suffering. They offer us compassion. That's karuna. Here's Hafiz's example of karuna. This is the kind of friend you are. Without making me realize my soul's anguished history, you slip into my house at night, and while I'm sleeping, you silently carry off all my suffering and sordid past in your beautiful hands. So, Karuna, this kind of love has the power to heal. When we remove our or transform our unhappiness, we heal ourselves. With this kind of compassion, we can help all people, animals, plants, and minerals, help heal even our Mother Earth. Mudita is another element of true love taught by the Buddha. Most teachers define mudita as empathetic joy, or joy for the good fortune of others. Our teacher says that this definition doesn't go far enough. He says we must also create joy for ourselves. So, you know, the other three elements of true love taught by the Buddha are about creating happiness, you know, realizing that we're not separate from other beings creates happiness in ourselves and others. Offering love, offering kindness is a way of offering happiness. Offering compassion is a way of removing suffering, so a way of offering happiness. But this aspect, mudita, is about offering joy. So how is joy different from happiness? I can give a personal example. My house has been really cold this winter. I know you Colorado and Omaha people don't think, and Canadian people don't think it's very cold, but it got into the 30s and 40s. It's really cold, and so my house is very cold, and all day long I'm very cold. But when I think about, I can, at the end of the day, take a hot bath, and then I'll be warm, then just that anticipation relieves my discomfort and brings me joy. So then my bathtub's in a big old room and it overlooks the woods and the fireplace, so then I pour a big hot bath. Then when I get in the bathtub and go, oh, I'm finally warm, well, that is happiness. So first, you know, we got to create some joy, some delight in our own lives. We forget that. That's one of the four, one-fourth of the elements of true love, creating delight in our lives, our own lives. And then we have to learn how to create joy and delight in our beloved ones and in people we don't even know, even people we don't even like, maybe. How do we do that? How do we create joy in the lives of our pets and of wild animals? How do we create joy for our gardens? What can we do to bring joy to the world, all the boys and girls? Joy to the fishes in the deep blue sea, and joy to you and me. Well, these are really good questions for our meditations and our reflections. But Hafiz can get us started. He says, plant so that your own heart will grow. Love so God will think, ah, I got Ken in that body. I should start inviting that soul over for coffee and rolls. Sing, because this is a food our starving world needs. Laugh, because that is the pure sound. And then we can get a little bit more help creating joy from the American poet and Pulitzer Prize winner Mary Oliver. She says, instructions for living a life. Pay attention. Be astonished. Tell about it. The four elements of true love taught by the Buddha are organic. True love is organic, like a tree, like a bird. It's a living thing that we need to feed and care for in order for it to grow. We begin by loving ourselves. We learn how to practice loving kindness, compassion, joy, and inclusiveness within ourselves. We're our own guinea pig. We experiment with loving. Sometimes our experiments work and we make ourselves and others happy, and sometimes not so much. Here's what Rumi, the 13th century Sufi theologian, says about that. He says, birds make great sky circles of their freedom. How do they learn it? They fall, and falling, they're given wings. When we have these four elements of true love in us, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and non-discrimination, non-separation, then we can start to share with a few others who are easy to love. And then, after some time, we add some others. And then others. And eventually, we learn to love those who are difficult to love. We include them. We keep adding people, adding animals, adding plants and minerals, until we include all beings in our love. Our love is without boundaries. I'd like all of us from Canada to New Mexico, from Pittsburgh to Boise, from Miami to Omaha to Leo, I'd like us to enjoy this love meditation together. So, Antonio, would you invite three bells for us? May I be peaceful, happy, and light in my body and spirit. May I be safe and free from injury. May I be free from anger, fear, and anxiety. May I learn to look at myself with the eyes of understanding and love. May I be able to recognize and touch the seeds of joy and happiness in myself. May I learn to identify and see the sources of anger, craving, and delusion in myself. Now I invite you to bring to mind someone you love easy to love. May you be peaceful, happy, and light in your body and spirit. May you be peaceful. May you be happy and light in your body and in your spirit. May you be safe and free from injury. May you be free from anger, fear, and anxiety. Now please bring to mind all beings, our Mother Earth, and all beings who live on her, in her, around her. All people throughout the cosmos, all animals, including roaches. All minerals, oceans and rivers and snowflakes, and all plants, flowers and weeds and broccoli. Just hold there in your heart all beings. May all beings be peaceful, happy, and light in our body and spirit. May we all be free from injury and safe. May all beings be free from anger, fear, and anxiety. May we hear one sound of the bell. So we'll let faith end in the talk. He says, admits everyone you see, you say to them, love me. Of course, you don't do this out loud, otherwise someone would call the cops. Still, though, think about this great pull in us to connect. Why not become the one who lives with a full moon in each eye that is always saying, with that sweet moon language, what every other eye in this world is dying to hear? My friends, I'm so happy to spend a little time with you today, and I know we all look forward to our teacher, Chun-Li, coming back to us in March. Thank you.